Track 12. Musical Memories. I recently read an amazing book which included a long and fascinating section about people who associate colours with sounds. Alison Applin has also been hearing about this. It's called Synesthesia. And so here is Maggie Secker, who may be singing the blues.
Listening to the radio the other day, I heard a discussion about synesthesia. This is a condition where people associate colours with letters or numbers, or sometimes with sounds. This got me thinking about chromesthesia, which is where people associate colours with different keys in music. For example, one person might say that the key D major produces images that are dark green. Or someone else might associate the key of A major with the colour orange. I then went on to think about the use of colour in musical compositions. While there are some examples of pieces of music which have the colour green in their title, green sleeves, for instance, or yellow, think of that submarine, or red or brown, the colour I found the most examples of was blue. So I thought we could have a listen to some blue music this time. Perhaps the most obvious piece with blue in its title is George Gershwin's Rhapsody in Blue, one of his most recognisable compositions. Gershwin was commissioned in 1923 by the bandleader Paul Whiteman to write a piece for an all-jazz concert in honour of the birthday anniversary of Abraham Lincoln. Gershwin was originally reluctant to accept the composition, but he was finally persuaded, and he later claimed that the seeds for the work began to germinate on a train journey to Boston, and that by the end of the journey, he'd sketched out in his mind the plot of the piece. Finally written in 1924 for solo piano and jazz band, Rhapsody in Blue combines elements of classical music with jazz rhythms. Gershwin said he heard it as a sort of music kaleidoscope of America, a vast melting pot of metropolitan madness. He first entitled the work American Rhapsody, but his brother Ira suggested Rhapsody in Blue following a visit to an exhibition of paintings by Whistler, which had titles such as Nocturne in Black and Gold and Arrangement in Grey and Black. Gershwin composed the piece in a matter of weeks, and it was premiered in February 1924 in Manhattan, where it was received with tumultuous applause. So here it is now, and I'm sure you too will want to put your hands together and applaud this exuberant music. Exhausting to play and listen to, isn't it? So, let's have a complete contrast now. Charles Villiers Stanford was born in 1852 and died in 1924, ironically the same year that Rhapsody in Blue was first performed. Stanford was an Anglo-Irish composer and one of the founders of the Royal College of Music in London, where he taught composition. He wrote The Bluebird in 1910 as a part song which sets the words of L'Oiseau Bleu, a poem by Mary Elizabeth Coleridge, which depicts a bluebird in a flight over a lake. The piece was widely performed by choral societies in England during Stanford's lifetime and is considered one of the best English part songs ever written. Composed for five-part choir, the soprano line is often sung as a solo, soaring above the other voices and illustrating the bird's flight above the lake. The whole song depicts a still, hot day and is a direct expression of natural shimmering beauty. So sit back and let the sound wash over you and fill you with a sense of stillness and calm. Absolutely beautiful. So, staying with bluebirds, the next piece needs very little introduction. You all know it, I'm sure, as it's The White Cliffs of Dover, made famous by Vera Lynn during World War II. The piece was actually composed in 1941 by Walter Kent, about a year after the start of the Battle of Britain. The lyricist was an American, Nat Burton, who was perhaps unaware that the bluebird itself is not indigenous to Britain, but we can now substitute the migrant swallow with its own elements of blue plumage. The song looks forward to a time when war would be over and peace would once again prevail over the iconic White Cliffs, which are still our border with the European mainland.
There'll be the White Cliffs of Dover tomorrow, just you wait and see. There'll be love and laughter and peace ever tomorrow, when the world is free.
OK, enough of the nostalgia. Let's find something a bit more upbeat. And there's not much more than upbeat than rock and roll, is there? The rock and roll staple Blue Suede Shoes was written and first recorded by the American singer and songwriter and guitarist Carl Perkins in 1955, incorporating elements of blues, country and pop music of the time. Elvis Presley recorded the song in 1956, and it was also recorded by Buddy Holly, Eddie Cochran and many more. There are differing accounts about the origin of the song. Johnny Cash, in his second autobiography, recalled planting the seed for the song in the autumn of 1955, recounting a meeting with a black American airman serving in Germany who had referred to his regulation airman's shoes as blue suede shoes and insisted that no one step on them or scuff them. In another version, Carl Perkins, planned at a dance in December 1955, noticed a young couple dancing near the stage. Between songs, he heard the boy say to his partner, "Don't step on my suedes." Perkins noticed the boy was wearing blue suede shoes, one of which had a scuff mark, and he was amused that the boy seemed more to care about his shoes than about the girl he was dancing with. Whatever its origin, it's such a great song that it deserves an airing now, don't you think?
Well, you can burn my house, steal my car, drink my liquor from an old fruit jar. Well, do anything that you want to do, but honey, lay off of my shoes. And don't you step on my blue suede shoe. Well, you can do anything but lay off of my blue suede shoe. Lock it!
Well, how about we come back across the pond to Europe, still in dance mood, but something a little more, shall we say, elegant than rock and roll. The Blue Danube is the English title of a waltz by the Austrian composer Johann Strauss the Younger, which was composed in 1866. First performed in Vienna in 1867, it's been one of the most consistently popular pieces of music in the classical repertoire. After the original music was written, the Vienna Men's Choral Association added the words by the poet Joseph Y, but Strauss adapted it into a purely orchestral version for the 1867 Paris World Fair, and it became a great success in this form. When Strauss's stepdaughter Alice asked the German composer Johann Brahms for his autograph, he wrote down the first bars of the Blue Danube and added the words, "Leider nicht von Johann Brahms," which means "sadly not" by Johann Brahms. The specifically Viennese style of the melody has made it a sort of unofficial national anthem of Austria. But it has also made appearances in popular culture, such as the 1968 film 2001 A Space Odyssey, in Jungle Book, the film Titanic, and even in an episode of Monty Python. But I always think the best rendition can be heard in the annual New Year's Day concert from Vienna. So take your partners, take to the floor, and sway along with the Blue Danube Waltz.
Thank you, Maggie.